What's up, Connor Nation? It's your boy. Oh God, could you imagine if I actually did intros like that? I don't think many people would be coming back. It's just not the type of audience. Anyway, this is part two of our breakdown of Casadega. We'll make the same joke later, but if you haven't already listened to part one, you should probably run it back and listen to that first, because you don't want to spoil the second half of the album before you've heard our thoughts on the first. No real intro besides our Patreon shout-out. Huge shout-outs to Mom and Goldie. Those are our $5 patrons. If you want to hear your name read at the beginning of an episode, head to patreon.com/connorsbasement and subscribe on our $5 tier. Thank you so much. Let's get into this episode. So anyway, like I was saying, Jesse, I was talking to my girlfriend. We're trying to figure out where we want to go during the summer. And, of course, I mentioned Casadega, and she goes, oh, yeah, that's where you're going to find the Center of Energy. They have those in Arizona, too. And I was confused because, like, well, did you want to go to Casadega or did you want to go to Arizona? I don't know. It's just a very strange conversation. I don't know. What do you think, man?
I think that there's just so many of those wonderful grounds that have vortexes that you could kind of go to any of those places.
Yeah, I guess we could kind of try to make a happy face or make a smile or something like that, and just try to get rid of the old energy and the old ways of thinking. All right, we've indulged.
Yeah, you get a little insight as to like how basic conversations between Chris and I work.
Oh boy, well, we're getting ready to get into Casadega part two. So last time we left off, we finished Soul Singer in the session band, right? So I think the next up would be Classic Cars.
Yeah, let's dive right in.
Yeah, give the kids what they want.
They got that in part one. They don't get another one. Let's not spoil our audience. They only get one per episode, even if the episode's broken into multiple parts.
We also gave a little 2-minute pre-ramble, if you will.
Oh, look at that. Maybe all of our preambles are pre-rambles.
Actually, yeah, very, very true. So if you haven't listened to the first episode, you should probably do that first. I mean, I guess you're welcome to listen to part two first, but it seems illogical, kind of out of order, generally two follows one. But I don't know. It's your world, I guess. We're just living in it. We might not even be real. I don't know Jesse's real. Jesse, do you know I'm real?
I mean, I haven't seen you in like physically in the flesh in years. So
true.
It's possible you're not real. And also, if you listen to part two before you listen to part one, you know what? You're a rebel. You're bucking the trend. You're a trailblazer. And we appreciate you. Please subscribe to the Patreon.
And also, you know, according to our Lord and Savior, Elon Musk, we must be living in a simulation. There's just no way that we're not. He has infallible logic, such as it's the only thing that makes sense. And I'm like, wow, I'm convinced. So yeah, I mean, definitely subscribe to Patreon. I don't know what you said about it. So, you know, let's just move on. So Jesse, before we get into the new content, kind of want to talk about something we were talking about last episode, Make a Plan to Love Me. We left off a little cliffhanger when we discovered about Too Short, capital T, $S, a rapper who had an album and a song called Life Is ... Too Short. So obviously there had to be some kind of connection, or Connor or whoever prints the lyrics wanted us to think of this rapper when we read the lyrics to the song. We kind of left it as like a little joking, a little like, wait, there has to be something there. I kind of tongue in cheek said, maybe it's about rampant consumerism. And you mentioned maybe it's about the music industry, which kind of set us on this path. So I did a little digging, and there's good news and bad news. What do you want first?
All right, let's have the good news, and then we'll get the bad news.
Okay. The good news is that there's still something to say. it's still fun, and it's a really cool kind of like Easter egg, I guess you could say, in kind of discovering it. The bad news, I don't think it's the smoking gun that we kind of thought it could be. I think from what I'm gathering, it's kind of just a nod, and again, maybe like a little wink and an Easter egg. Going through, I didn't like break down the album line by line, kind of like what we do with Connor's album, but I took a look at the song, and it's very focused on kind of like that hustle and grind, right? And I think you hear it a lot in rap music that if you want something, if you want your dreams to be a reality, you're going to have to work really hard while other people are messing around with drugs or messing around with just like hanging out and doing whatever. I toiled in blood, sweat, and tears for what I have. And, you know, there's something to admire with that about, like, I don't know if it's a rag to riches story, but, you know, that kind of general thing. I guess my take on it overall of life is too short in the context of Make a Plan to Love Me kind of goes more into the vein of the simplest answer of life is too short to get maybe just get bogged down in the plotting and the scheming and this and that. You know, death comes, it doesn't ask, it doesn't time things when it's convenient for you. So focus on love, focus on me, focus on this relationship, and there will be time to hustle and grind. You know, it's a value judgment, I guess you could say.
Oh, nice. Good interpretation. Little disappointed there wasn't a deeper rabbit hole to go down and learn some deep lore. But I don't know. I thought we had that like little spark of excitement, and I still think the Easter egg is fun. So yeah, thanks, Chris, for doing the follow-up research.
Well, anyway, yeah, that was a lot of fun just to kind of look into it. Unfortunately, no pictures of Connor and Too Short hanging out at the Illuminati party or anything like that. that, you know, clearly everyone, you know, rich, famous, and powerful is in. So a little bit of a bummer that way. But, you know, Jay-Z really keeps things on lock with the Illuminati. So
can't imagine somebody worse suited to the Illuminati than Connor Oberst.
God, can you imagine? Yeah, so I guess without further pre-ramble, it's so strange not talking about the album itself and like giving some context, but you should have already gotten that. So again, listen to part one, or else Jesse is gonna come. He's gonna bring the baseball bat and he's gonna take out your kneecaps.
I've been getting very good. I've been practicing. Don't ask on who or where or why. Just know that I'm getting better.
It's just himself. You're just sitting on your bed and just like whacking yourself every couple of... Ow!
The next time we see each other, it's like, Jesse, why are you in a wheelchair? And kind of funny story. I'm getting real good for this whole podcast gig I got going.
Oh, God. Anyway, so, boy, howdy. I guess at the very least, you can still drive a classic car. I don't know. All right. Anyway.
It's good. Stick with that one.
Sure wasn't. Yeah, you know. yeah, make sure you listen to part one, or Jesse's going to come by with his baseball bat riding through in his 68 Cadillac, a real classic car. By the way, car enthusiasts, I don't know if a 68 Cadillac is like a thing. Just don't tell anyone.
What is a car, though? Like, before we start, I just want, like, a clear definition. What is a car?
It is an automobile. I feel like that doesn't... If someone was like, what's a car? And you're like, it's an automobile. They'd be like, what's an automobile? It's a self-propelled metal, but also you control it?
It's the leather, metal, and glass box that you find yourself trapped in, like, a good 30% of your day.
You know, where you find yourself just trapped in your styrofoam coffin, asleep on the interstate.
Okay, Chris, you gotta save those for when it's time to talk about the song.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So, anyway, Kochek Dream Song, huh? just skip the first four songs of the episode.
Do you think no one's gonna notice if we skip half of this episode and rush to the end?
Oh god. Alright, classic cars. Why don't you kick it off? I would love to hear what you have to say.
Oh yeah, sure. So this song was really interesting because it is what I have kind of thought of being the last song before things get pretty trippy. And it's one that we could even draw some comparison to Take It Easy, Love Nothing. Mm. In that we have the speaker of the song who is in a relationship with an older woman. And I have yet again to find the interview where Connor was talking about how he's always had some proclivity for engaging with older women. Mm-hmm. That exists somewhere on the internet, and I will find it.
Otherwise, it'll be Sinbad and Shazam all over again.
Wait, explain this. What is this?
You know the Mandela effect?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so
that's like the big prominent example is that everyone seems to remember, even myself, I do kind of remember a movie where Sinbad played a genie named Shazam. However, there's a movie called Kazam that Shaq was in where he played a genie. and just with like the entire shared consciousness of people that really fervently believe they watched this movie as a kid, it became just a widespread phenomenon of like, there is a truth out there that they are not telling us.
Right. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Who knows? Maybe one day, like, this generation of kids will be like, oh, do you remember that, like, one movie where Will Smith played Shazam? It's like, no. He was in the live-action Disney remake of Aladdin where he was the genie. And then that generation collectively shivers remembering what Disney is doing to its IP.
Do you remember that one podcast episode where Jesse was talking about Connor's interview, talking about older women? That's what the future kids will be saying because we're going global, baby.
And then the kids will be like, who the fuck is Connor Oberst?
I only know Chris and Jesse.
those are the two true prophets.
Those are the only two people I've ever known.
At which point we would say, like, please parent your kids better.
Come here, child.
You'll always find your home in the cult of, I mean, in the society of Jesse and Chris.
We do live in a society. Oh, boy. All right, keep going.
So I think that there's something really interesting in the song about the maturity, and I guess that's kind of the play on words there, between the attitude of the speaker toward the subject of the song. Because before we got to a song like this, the love interest in any of these songs tends to be, to my recollection, a bit objectified and not really given too deep of a like backstory or reasoning for why they are the way they are. But this song is almost exclusively dedicated to why the subject of the song is how they are and why they behave in certain ways. So not to rush to the end of the song, but there is a sort of mutual respect by the end of it, where even though the relationship dissolves for one reason or another, without even knowing, I guess I took up her advice, painted her front door, it seemed a suitable goodbye. So there's no sense in my reading of the song that there is any sort of bitterness about the end of the relationship. That the speaker understands the subject, understands where she's coming from, took away something from that, and then parted on amicable terms, mm-hmm. which, based on what we've discussed in previous episodes, this seems kind of new as far as like the romantic interest songs go. I don't know. What do you think? Did you think along those lines, or did you go a completely different direction with this one?
No, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of like the mutual respect, that there doesn't seem to be any kind of animosity. It's just kind of just like a reflection on a different period of time for him where he had this brief, somewhat meaningful relationship, and he seems to just have learned from it. And I guess how your experiences with people, whether brief or long, change you in some kind of way. And I guess the lessons that he learned from his brief tryst with this woman. but I guess for me, I want to detail a couple of things. So in the first verse, it does seem like Connor is kind of talking about his need for some kind of period of rest before or after a big change, and kind of going back to what we were talking about in the last episode about the writing was on the wall for Bright Eyes. Looking back at this with 2020 vision, with hindsight, that Bright Eyes would take the hiatus. I think this is another sign that that Connor and the band needed a bit of a break, needed a bit of a rest. And where I see that is kind of this cautionary tale of the country singer and Connor being a little, I guess, a little on the fence of, does he want to be one of the best country singers, live fast, die young, and burn out? Or does he need to get out of California, tell everyone he made a mistake, and kind of give himself a little bit of R&R and just kind of reset, reboot? Which is not what R&R stands for, but we're going to pretend now that is exactly what it means. So moving on, this is a point that I'll kind of bring up in a later song, but looking at the lyrics where he starts talking about the sky being torn up denim, the clouds just splattered paint, I think it could be kind of a clever way of detailing that the world is, to an extent, like subjective and self-made, right? By making the cloud and the moon and the stars and whatever you want to say, kind of this material and kind of artsy material, right? You can think of overalls being covered in paint. So I don't know. It's kind of a curious way of explaining or of describing the sky and the clouds. It's a room I'm renovating. It's a name I've got to change. So he can renovate his sky, his clouds, and change the name, change how he's maybe viewing things or change his perception of the world. Later, when he does mention painting her front door, like you said, I don't know, maybe that is his effect that he had on her, just like a small little thing that when she now looks back on her door, she's going to remember, at least until it gets covered in a new coat of paint, that was his impact. It's a little weird, it's a little out there, but I don't know, it was something I was on the scent of, on the trail of.
No, I get that. And well, I guess we'll add this to the list of things that Jesse remembers, but doesn't have any hard evidence to back up. I remembered reading or hearing in an interview somewhere that Connor wasn't particularly fond of the band name Bright Eyes. That he's always sort of like held it as like a thing he did when he was a kid. And so according to that interview, he was basically told like if he would change it, it would make marketing confusing. So it's better to be like consistent with your band and just keep the name. But I guess it also makes sense that like he also goes off and does other side projects. So like he does Mystic Valley Band and he does his own like under his own solo work for as Connor Oberst alone. So maybe that is referencing the fact that he is, you know, toying with the idea of rebranding, so to speak. And there was that time where we like didn't know what was going on with Bright Eyes. And then when we got the next Bright Eyes album, it was supposedly the last one. So it seems to kind of hint in that direction. And then maybe also, like you're saying, the painting of the front door could just reference the fact that, like, to use maybe kitschy language for this, like, his love language is showing change and progress, and part of that is just like, I'm leaving and I'm making a fresh start, so I might as well leave you with a fresh start, fresh coat of paint kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. My final thoughts: in the next verse, he kind of talks a little bit maybe about how he wishes he could make a decision and live by it, but he's stuck in some sort of decision paralysis, unsure of what his next move is or where to go next. And again, just kind of repetition of maybe that theme that's recurring about this unsuredness. I don't know if that's a word, but it's good enough for me right now. Don't you dock points off of me, Mr. Jesse. his unsuredness. Where, you know, Casadega, a place to reset, a place to get clean, perhaps. and anyway, my last thought too is that the second half of the song overall, I think, mirrors a little bit of what we're going to hear on Middleman. Connor is learning a lot from her, and he's made the observation that maybe if you suppress your most honest self, it's a little easier to skip through. It's just like a pleasant, loved, but not fully honest individual. You know, you're not lying, but you're not maybe showing all of your vulnerabilities. Kind of like what you were saying, I don't think he speaks of it in like great reverence of, wow, this is a genius way of doing things, but rather like a nod of respect. Like, I understand that, living your life as a chic chameleon. But I don't know. I like I said, maybe hinting a little bit of what I'll be talking about, at least on Middleman. But I think he feels a little bit of jealousy, but at the same time, a little bit of a diss that never trust a heart that's so bent it can't break. Like, maybe this isn't exactly for me, or at least cautioning other people that maybe it's not 100% the way that he thinks you should live your life.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk about two of the lines that you referenced. So I thought it was interesting, not that we're going to build a timeline here of Connor's, the character Connor's decision to go to Casadega or to go and get engaged with this kind of more esoteric spiritual side of things. I did find the line, "She talked forever about the faces of the moon," to be interesting, because the implication being that whoever this song is about, that person is very much into astrology. And so I like to think that this was maybe the spark of an interest in the esoteric and in the spiritual, that somebody is super into star signs and caring about what phase the moon is in. And Connor maybe being receptive to that sort of idea. And as you said, kind of like what we've talked about in previous episodes about a kind of jealousy for people who are religious and who have a faith, that maybe that sparks that same sort of jealousy or envy of somebody who puts their faith in something not material, right? Like, you know, ask somebody who believes in astrology if they have like material proof of their belief, and there's not really that. It's faith-based in right. many ways. Lily, if you're listening, I apologize. I respect you immensely.
Yeah, I can definitely, it's interesting because, like you said, maybe opening his mind to that kind of stuff. And super fast forward, but just overall, when you think about the People's Key and how much religious or spiritual symbolism is on that, I mean, like you said, maybe this is a foot in the door, and maybe even, you know, we'd have to really get into People's Key to break it down, but like, maybe it's a sign of things to come, whether it is spoken as just an understanding or a respect of maybe some of the tenets of various religions, or maybe that he does start to believe in something. I'm not sure, actually, but I don't know. thought for another episode.
Yeah. And it also could just be a like a kind of a flirtation with the idea. Like, it doesn't, you don't need to, you know, full tilt believe in something to the core of your being when you're exposed to it. But maybe this person, as you said before, like, they just had some wisdom to pass down that he took away and then showed respect for and homage to in this song. You know, maybe it's not enough to engender some sort of like deep belief in a thing, but maybe it's enough to like consider it, to take at least some of it to heart. And then you had also mentioned, never trust a heart that's so bent it can't break. And I've always loved that line. There's just something so evocative about that line. It's just good. And I can't really even put it into words just how much I respect that idea. That maybe there is virtue in being able to have a broken heart, to be devastated by something. And maybe you should be distrustful of somebody who doesn't or is incapable of having a broken heart. I don't know. I just think it's profound in ways I can't begin to explain.
So this is out of nowhere. A, I think you said that really well. I think that's a great way of like understanding, bringing down lyric. But you remember how like old cars, when they crashed, the idea was to not let a lot of damage on the cars, right? So you'd have like little dings and the bulk of the impact would go onto the individual driver.
Right. They didn't realize like, oh, you should design this so that like all the force goes to the car and wrecks the car instead of like the living person driving it.
Right. I don't know. Like, could that be a thing? Like, the classic car is one that when it gets hit, it bends but doesn't break. Like, the fender gets a little dented, but it doesn't crumple like the front of a new minivan, because the idea is like, hey, let's not kill the children that are sitting in the backseat. That is probably reading way too much into it, but you know what? That is our goal on the podcast, is to read way too much into things. So,
I mean, the song is called Classic Cars. I don't necessarily blame you for making that jump of logic.
Maybe that's why the best country singers died in the back.
Yeah, because they were poorly designed.
Someone else crashed them. No. Oh god. You shouldn't be laughing about someone else's death, but I guess, you know, they're people in a story we can't take.
Oh, right. Man. I don't, I probably should have done more research. I don't know if this is referring to any specific person, but since I don't know of that specific person, we're talking about hypothetical people.
Yes, a hypothetical person who crashed their 68 Cadillac and unfortunately, due to the standards at the time, did not make it through. Oh, God. Dark humor. Anyway.
Yeah, so, you love to see it.
Right? Well, maybe kind of going back to what you're saying about, you know, spirituality, religion, that kind of stuff. Maybe it is better just to have no opinion on them and instead, like, I don't know, play the center role, like a mediator or I don't know. What's a better word for it? You're smart. You're English.
I can't honestly think of any word off the top of my head. Like, if only there was a word that described, like, a person, like a man who was in the middle of that thing, right? Like, who is in the middle between two. I just can't. Yeah. I can't think of a single one.
Yeah. All right. Whatever. Let's just move on. So, middleman, right? Next yep. track on the album. When I first went through this album when it came out, this was my favorite song for quite a bit of time. It's just like a really cool sounding song. Mm. And I wasn't as, I guess, deep into dissecting every single lyric at this point, or like really fathoming every single lyric, right? but yeah, this was the first song that really kind of drew me in, because it is very I don't think hypnotic is the right word, but it really just grabbed my attention right off the bat. You know, you have that kind of like trippy background speaking. I don't even want to call it singing, speaking of just like various, almost, it's such, so ominous, like the jobs that he's saying, bone polishers, ditch diggers, yeah, you know, stuff like that. Like, oh, there's like an eeriness to it all. But the song itself, it's pretty short, and I think it's kind of to the point, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's a whole lot more to it, but I think he's just kind of hoping to blend in and disappear into a world of just being an average, everyday, agreeable, chic chameleon, kind of like what I was getting on to, with the last track. I know he says he's become the middleman, but I don't believe it, because you put four wins on this album. Don't think you can say you've necessarily become the middleman and blended into the gray areas, because I think that's a pretty hard stance to take. But I don't know, just kind of that role of if you never argue with anyone, technically you can kind of be everyone's friend, at what cost though?
Right. In the wise words of the philosopher Taylor Swift, a friend to all is a friend to none.
Oh, she never misses.
No, she does. She's I mean, we could bring up the music alignment chart, political alignment chart. Taylor Swift is pure neutral. But no, I want to talk to each of your points. And I mean, that sound that you got, I described it as almost like a Middle Eastern sound. I described it as a dogged journey through the desert. There is something like really relentless about the sound that I just, every time I listen to it, I just imagine people going through the desert. Just moving forward. There's just something relentless about how the song just kind of carries through. And yeah, I definitely also picked up on that like sort of centrist, lying by omission sort of, let me just blend into the background thing, as like a form of disguise or a way to like sort of evade the harder questions of life. And I mean, what I found really interesting was that line about like the pegs were gold, the band was old, they played in halftime. And I'm wondering if there is a specific artist that Connor's referencing here, and how like there's I was being my typical stalker, and I just went to Connor Oberst's Instagram page, and there was like one post that he made about like, it was like a selfie, and he just kind of wrote in the body, if that was indeed him actually writing the post, about mm-hmm. how like, oh, you know, if you want to make a change in this country, you have to vote and make sure you vote this way. And then Phoebe Bridgers decided to comment, and she said very tongue in cheek, stick to the music, which is very funny, but also it kind of reveals an attitude about a lot of people where like, if a musical artist does anything in the political realm, that is a common response. Like, oh, my favorite artist is doing this. They are talking about this and I disagree. And like, oh, just stick to the music. I liked you better when you weren't into that politics stuff. And so I'm curious, like, is there an artist that he's referencing here that kind of did that? That's sort of like, instead of taking a stand, decided just to be neutral for the sake of being agreeable, a chic chameleon, as we've come to know. But otherwise, yeah, I don't think it's him. I don't think he's referring to himself here, especially with the content of this album. And I guess the last thing I want to say on that point, and I don't know whether this is supposed to be a callback to At the Bottom of Everything, but we have that particular line. I keep my footlights shining bright, just like I keep my exits wide. And footlights, obviously, like a theater, a performer, it's something to light the stage that's you know, your mm-hmm. your audience isn't really going to see, but will light the stage. So there's evoking like that performance thing. But I also couldn't help but think of exits and footlights on planes, like the safety lights leave in case of an emergency, which made me think of At the Bottom of Everything. Just because it's like, does he want to walk back? Like, I don't know, like that reference of, you know, it would be so much easier for me to walk back the things I've said in previous albums just to be agreeable, just to be neutral. And there is something tempting about like not taking a stand for the sake of just like coasting through life.
It's kind of like what I was mentioning about the video for Four Winds. You know, it's a little indulgent, but at the same time, you know, it's this, I'm taking a stand for what I believe in, and everyone is throwing tomatoes at me. So like, I got to keep my exit. If I'm not going to blend in, if I'm not going to go quietly into that good night, then I'm going to have to make sure that I have an exit strategy for when the hate comes, when the Twitter cancel culture comes. Yeah.
No, I like that reading of it. That's solid.
It is, I guess, just kind of as you were saying, I think I'll maybe be repeating kind of what you said, but I guess you helped me in a way fully grasp how I'm reading the song, and maybe I didn't fully understand. You can correct me, but otherwise it'll be a great summation or conclusion, I guess, unless of course you had anything else. But I guess what I'm hearing is a little bit of a disappointment, or I guess maybe an admonishment of the people who, and especially those with a platform, that would rather ride the center and toe the middle, because it's the same thing that we were talking about in 2016 and in 2020 of, you know, playing the center is just enabling is enabling a push to the right, right? It's enabling, allowing certain viewpoints to have a seat at the table that should never, ever be at a seat at the table. For example, arguing human rights, you know, that there should be no argument there. There is no middle position between whether someone lives or dies, you know? And especially because the album is very political. I wonder if it is maybe about someone specific, but at the same time, it could be, you know, the band, the pegs were gold, the band was old. Maybe this is a decorated artist. And there's someone he looked up to from years past and, you know, hoped that they would share these same views as him or be willing to take a stand against Bush, against, you know, the quote unquote war on terror. But instead, they kind of just played the patriotic fiddle or found a way to blend in and not say anything at all.
Yeah, I'd be curious to do a little more research and see like if there was any prominent figures that sort of came out on the wrong side of things for that. But as of right now, I don't know. And I guess you could kind of like just apply that to any number of like vague artists during that time. Like a lot of artists sort of jumped on the whole like uber patriotic thing, and maybe not for pure reasons, maybe just, oh, we got a lot of people whipped up into a patriotic fever, might as well make a country album all about this and just cash in. All right, well, I think that we need to like take a step back from this whole centrism thing. We need to really like just cleanse ourselves of any ideas of going to the middle, you know?
Do you want to look at Bernie memes?
Oh, that would warm my heart.
Cleanse the soul. So, cleanse
song. Oh, middleman. Right? That was the term we were trying to think of.
Oh, that would have been good for the
transition. That would have been solid middleman for the transition. Anyway.
Yeah, so the first thing that I thought of for cleanse song was... just because you get death doesn't mean death dying. It means transformation. It means rebirth, right? as our lovely narrator in the beginning of the album tells us. And I think that is basically the ethos, I guess, of the song. From a
macro lens, I think Connor is looking at the kind of death of the society around him, empires rising and falling. It's something that we've been talking about, especially even now after, you know, 14 years after this album has come out, the quote unquote end of the American empire, because they don't last forever. I think there's a, I don't know, a historical theory or something like that of a certain amount of time that any empire can last based off of the length of the Roman Empire, British Empire, that kind of stuff. And that America is heading towards its collapse. And really, it does seem more imminent now than ever, unfortunately. Or I guess fortunately, if you don't live in America, or if you live in Vuvuzela, 100 billion dead breadlines.
Is that staying in?
I don't know. I hate the right Those people in Vuvuzela, 100 billion dead breadline, Fidel Castro would be glad to see the American empire fall.
Good times are had by all.
Oh, God. Anyway, so from the more personal lens, Connor is telling a story about trying to get clean on the West Coast and his rebirth of sorts. You know, I guess I'll just kind of go all the way through because I don't have too much more. But I've always been puzzled at the end, and you can save your response to this for the end. But those lines, your wife gave birth to a funeral dirge as you woke up purged as a wailing infant in Krungthep, Thailand. The use there, like, wait, my wife gave birth and I was reborn. I'm probably reading too much into it, but I always found that very confusing. But I know that the general premise is again, rebirth in whatever form. And I guess I'll wrap everything up in a neat little bow. And I think he's mentioning the brevity of the human existence. In the endlessness of time and space, we are a tiny blip. And when our civilizations fall, there will still be nature around to take our place.
Yeah, I do think that the song has several oddly positive and humbling messages of, like, that sort of recurring line about, did you know that the wind, when it blows, it's older than Rome? Like, the idea that, just remember that in the grand scheme of things, our existence is a blip. And so if it gets you down at all, just remember that, like, life goes on, essentially. The world goes on. I do particularly like that line, don't forget what you've learned, all you give is returned. And that's a very oddly positive thing to come from a Bright Eyes album, of not, like, you know, it has the neutrality of, like, oh, if you, you know, give shit, you'll get shit back. But I think this is meant to be, if you ever feel like the good that you're trying to put into the world is not paying off, just remember that in one way or another, it finds its way back to you. And, I mean, that's always how I interpreted that.
I like that. I think I spent a little too much time in Cleanse Song getting maybe bogged down in the stuff you need to cleanse from, and maybe not necessarily the cleansing itself. So no, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it definitely touches on that. Like, it's not a purely, I guess, song that's free from the sorrows that you're trying to purge yourself of, that you're trying to cleanse yourself of. That line that you gave, I think, is really interesting. But okay, so here's my interpretation of it, right? So, many lifetimes have passed in an instant, reminded of a millstone house in a seaside town where your heart gave out on a in a mission bed. So your wife gave birth to a funeral dirge as you woke up purged as a wailing infant in Krubthep, Thailand. So the way that I always interpreted that was, as this person dies, their wife, who they left behind, gives birth to new life, but in the wake of this dead person. And then that person who has recently deceased is reincarnated then as a child. And so, like, it's a really, like, tangled metaphor for what the cycle of life and death is.
Yeah.
That there's life and death and birth and rebirth all happening all at once. And then while that gets really confusing and that's a lot to unpack, just remember that the wind that is rustling the chimes that you bought at your local Marshall's has been along longer than that. So, like, just try not to let that overwhelm you too much. I don't know. That's how I've interpreted those lines.
Yeah, I think again, maybe I was getting too caught up in the specifics of every single word and not giving a little bit of poetic license as well for that. But yeah, the general concept's still there of birth and rebirth, of, it doesn't mean death dying, it means transformation.
Right.
It is a positive song. He does still make sure that you know exactly what needs cleansing and why, in terms of watching empires fall from, his Manhattan apartment, that kind of thing. But that ultimately we do need some time to reset and get clean. And whether that be because of drugs, which is, to be honest, quite likely,
right.
Just because of some shit that you're going through at that time. But yeah, I don't know if you had anything else for a cleanse song though.
Well, I do have one last thing.
Okay. Oh, let's hear it.
Now, there has been a question that has plagued the minds of millions for years, and I want to offer up some evidence to finally put to rest the question, is Connor Oberst a gamer? And I think the answer is yes.
Oh, shit.
Okay, but he exclusively plays PS1 games. Okay, all right, so... because I don't genuinely remember whether I brought this up when we were talking about Digital Ash. But when I was looking through the lyrics for Cleanse Song, the line about a millstone house in a seaside town, some user brought up the fact that in the video game Chrono Cross, the game begins in a seaside town with the character waking up, I guess. I have not played Chrono Cross. And kind of pointed to the fact that there is some similarities between some of the songs on the album and the overworld map theme from Chrono Cross. And if you go and listen to it, you can kind of get that feeling. Additionally, I implore everybody listening to please just YouTube the overworld theme from Final Fantasy IX, and then I would then ask you to go back and listen to Hit the Switch, and I want to see if anybody gets the same comparisons between the two songs that I did, and both are PS1 games. So is Connor spending a lot of time with a PS1 in the tour van, just, you know, playing some JRPGs while he's on tour? Probably.
I don't know if this is a bigger story than the Too Short. I think this one is bigger, you know what I mean? Because Too Short, like, we were given a concrete clue for that. This, whoever the user was that pointed that out, like, this is going to need to go through some verification. But if this is true, we'll have to add it into the New Testament of the Bright Eyes discography.
I also need to, like, I'm Googling this in real time. I need to see whether anybody has, for Hit the Switch, made any sort of comparison to Final Fantasy IX. I doubt it. I think this is something that exists purely in my sick brain.
So you know what this means, dear listeners. It's time to boot up Chrono Cross. or honestly, just go to YouTube. I don't know. That's so interesting. And I can't really say, I can't disagree because I don't know enough about it. And it just seems crazy enough that I want to believe. I feel like David Duchovny in the X-Files. You know, I want to believe. So, you know what? I accept it. I absolutely accept it. And I think that's it. Podcast over. We're going to hand it over to the person that found this connection, because clearly they know a whole lot more than we do.
Yeah. We'll send them an email and just be like, hey, we heard you cracked the Connor Oberst is a gamer case way long ago. So you got the podcast. Here are the keys. We cleaned up the place for you. Treat her well. We put a lot of TLC into this.
Oh boy, I don't know. I feel like if we were to hand off the podcast, do you think there'd be riots?
I mean, no one would riot for less.
But wouldn't they?
I mean, like, there's plenty more you could riot about. But I guess if some people were very drunk and they needed an excuse to riot for something, that it could be a thing.
I just want my own internet mob so that I can dox my enemies and have my internet following ruin their lives. Is that so much to ask for?
Well, I mean, I think we should start just by being more active on Twitter. That could be a start, you know?
Cesspool.
That's one social media site I just have no interest in being part of.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, we quickly stopped using our Twitter and put everything to Instagram. Not that Instagram is like the paragon of internet virtue or anything, but, you know, it's better than Twitter.
It's easier to ignore the comments on Instagram.
That should be Instagram's like new ad campaign. Instagram, it's better than Twitter. Be like,
shit, it should just all be right. Instagram. It's not Twitter.
Oh boy. Well, no one would write for less. You know what's interesting about this song? It turned into my song whenever I was going through like a big change in my life, you know, like moving or going away to college, things like that. I don't think there was anything really specific about the song, like in the lyrics or anything like that, that's maybe related to that, but it was just music for the moment, and this was a song that played when, you know, those feelings hit me, and therefore this became my song for that. So I have a very, like, you know, strong feelings towards this song because, you know, it has all that meaning for me. But it is, I don't know, it's a heavy one. For me, I guess kind of what I'm reading is a lot about death as an equalizer in the beginning, how it supersedes everything, or how it doesn't wait. It doesn't ask, as Connor says earlier in the album on Make a Plan to Love Me, and can happen suddenly, instantly in the sunshine or in the dark. But I think it is a specific type of death, and I get a lot of war feelings about it, and I don't know if you're picking up the same vibe. Maybe
it's certainly an apocalyptic song, mm-hmm. right? I do remember we had seen. I don't know if it was. I'm pretty sure it was just Connor Oberst. I don't think it was Bright Eyes, but we saw Connor, and he played this live once, and he put a huge emphasis on that line about the vengeance of the sea as being like a harbinger of death. after, you know, kind of going on a screed beforehand, talking about how we should give a shit about the environment. So, yeah, that kind of solidified it for me that this was very much a song about the world ending. And, you know, see the sterile soil, the poisoned sky, the yellow water, final scraps of life, bringing new tears. Like, I don't know if you can get more apocalyptic than that. And I don't know quite how to feel about the end of the song either, because it ends on like that swelling kind of like triumphant, I don't know, fanfare maybe is the wrong word here, but like, wake, but leave that blanket around you. There's nowhere else safe. I'm leaving this place, but there's nothing I'm planning to take, just you. And it's like, I don't know. It felt like a happy ending, though in my heart, I know it's not one.
Right.
And, I don't know. I get the what you're saying about how this is a kind of a change or transition song, right? I'm leaving this place, but there's nothing I'm planning to take. That's just like, if you, I don't know what else you can say to sum up a life-changing shift, right? Of fresh new, there's nothing I'm taking from this. And mm-hmm. there's going to be a brand new start somewhere else, except you. And I don't know how to feel about that just you part there.
Well, I think he's talking to me, actually.
Right.
So when he says you, he's referring to me, because when I hear it, you would obviously then be me. I guess try to keep up. We're kind of pretty deep in the thick of this. I think you'd understand that stuff by now.
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to go to the genius, and I'm just going to make sure just you. You refers to Chris, last name redacted.
You know, one thing that I wrote down about it too was like, I said it was a bleak and depressingly prescient apocalypse, you know, like,
yeah.
And I know he wasn't the first or definitely not the last to have seen this future coming, but damn, it hurts all the same. The one thing I want to maybe call to attention, and maybe I think some of it is like the war symbolism. You know, the trenches, the hard rain, and everything. But I get Don't Know When But A Day's Gonna Come, like part two vibes. Because it is a very like murky, I want to say like militant song. You know what I mean? It is very driving, I guess. And, you know, and Don't Know When Day's Gonna Come, you know, you have the snare that just keeps going, like you're walking into battle. And the entire beginning of the song gives me kind of similar vibes, I guess I'd say, until it then again it swells towards the end, which Don't Know When But A Day's Gonna Come has its own fanfare at the end as well, with the very weird sounding trumpets, a very eerie, I want to say, probably use that word again, sound. And I don't know, I think that there's definitely some overlap between these two, especially because on Don't Know When Day's Gonna Come, that lyric that didn't make it into the original cut of the album, but was on the remastered, about we must defend ourselves, fight on foreign soil against the infidels with the oil well, God save gas prices. And it is a...
Oh, God.
Yeah, right? And it is a... Definitely something that I feel echoed here, like a similar sentiment, I guess.
Yeah, prescient for sure. No, I also get that sort of vibe of like trying to talk people out of this mindset of patriotism, like blind patriotism being the way forward, and just sort of go with the rhetoric of, you know, yeah, we need to invade the Middle East because they have weapons of mass destruction, and not, you know, kind of seeing it for what it is in like in as imperialism. And the line "little soldier, little insect," you know, war, it has no heart, also kind of echoes back to like the sort of grim comparison of people to insects from Digital Ash.
and like, oh, if you take this rhetoric at face value, you're going to end up just like that. But I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I think I didn't even think about that in terms of like that little soldier, little insect. And then I think it was, I believe in symmetry, right? And just kind of wishing to be as free and as simple as the insect who never thinks that to accept his fate. I don't want to retcon I believe in symmetry, but I think you could, if you remove that from the context of the song, you could definitely apply that to someone that, you know, goes to war for blind patriotism. That this is all I was meant for. I was born and bred to die. And I don't know, it's I don't want to say it's oddly placed, but it is interesting having come from Cleanse Song to go here and then lead into Coat Check Dream Song. I don't necessarily think that maybe there is some intention behind that to a degree, but I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah, if anything, I would imagine that, I don't know, the ordering of the songs is a little odd. I agree. Like, I imagine Cleanse Song to sort of at least precede I Must Belong Somewhere as sort of like that, like, I don't know, maybe in True Bright Eyes fashion, being like, yeah, things are fucked up, but I'm, you know, like, processing it and working through, like, more positive ways to see things. And I guess we'll get to it, but, like, the end of the album is uncharacteristically a bit of a bummer. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Because I think we said in the past that, like, most of the songs are, if not overtly positive, they at least leave the door open for a positive message. But this is one of those few, in my opinion, few times where the album is just sort of ambiguous, slanting towards, like, the bummer end of things.
I'm gonna drop a little hint and say that was very prescient of you, Jesse. I'm gonna borrow that word. There's something in my notes that you've activated my trap card. So does this also mean that you are ready to move on to the get your coat checked to?
See, Chris, I'm gonna stop you right there because the song is so kind of cryptic and unknowable that I don't think we can even transition properly. Yeah, I know,
right? Oh boy, Coat Check Dream Song. Yeah, you know what? Kick us off, bad boy.
So, we were texting a little bit before we started recording, and Chris was like, I don't know what the fuck the song is about. And I said, okay, cool. So let me take a look and let me just go over my notes. And then I, sitting in front of my computer, was like, I don't know what this fucking song is about. I'll give my best crack at it. I kind of saw this as a bit of like a kickback song that felt like it could have not sonically, but lyrically, kind of fit in with Digital Ash. In that it felt like the being in the throes of addiction and sort of, you know, you take somebody like Conor Oberst and what does that mind produce when they are trying to like struggle through addiction and also create artistically. And you get something like this, where it is a mishmash fever dream of personal, political, and esoteric concern blended into one song is the best I can do for you there.
So, you know, I'm not very confident in mine either, but I feel like I went a little more like line by line, maybe like overall thought about the song, because I don't know, it helped me break things down. And So this is my breakthrough. I want to say like half an hour to an hour before we started recording. I was like, I got to figure something out. So let's start from kind of from the beginning of one brick on top of another, such is the measure of man. Planets are inset like diamonds on a gravity halo, eternity's wedding band. First off, need to say, I've been gushing about that line since high school. It is.
Yes.
You probably remember. I think it is one of the most beautifully written lines ever. It just a magnificent description of like our solar system. Like, wow.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Makes me want to throw up when I think about it. like someone wrote this. So, and I think he's kind of comparing maybe like the measure of human achievement being as simple as brick on brick to the awe of the massive Chadco solar system. So much larger and impressive and large pecs and a chiseled jaw versus our dinky little like skyscrapers and things like that. And we're like, wow, look at what we did. So I think it may continue. As he says, you know, he's stuck, as he says, like stuck on a ladder to heaven, as if we're trying to build our way into some unknown legacy of greatness, while again, at the same time, being tried for crimes against humanity at The Hague. So our achievement is being built off of the backs of crimes against our own people. And again, this kind of juxtaposition of, do you really think this is so great? Do you think having the largest economy is worth X, Y, and Z sort of thing? I don't know. This is kind of where I'm headed for it. Going a little further as we get into, I guess, like maybe you could call it the third verse or the second half of that verse. Really, I guess the second half of the verse. I think he kind of describes some of those crimes: environmental pollution, the destruction of nature for interstates, fascism as well. I guess that was my translation of the Black Globes. So actually kind of what you said about Yeats and the need for a strong hand as the way to set us free. I think it's this old way of thinking of, if you shackle the earth, if you turn our earth into a black globe covered in iron, only then can we be free. And, you know, Connor obviously representing the opposite of that, where, you know, freedom is not being governed by, you know, fascist politics, basically.
I think that it's really interesting that the song follows Klen's song and No One Would Riot for Less. Almost like this is a relapse. Like, you thought you were getting better, you thought you had a handle on things, and all of these fears that could all be summed up by what you're saying, as far as like that strict authoritarian rule that is going to drive us nose first into the ground, and commit all sorts of heinous crimes and essentially end the world. I can see why that could drive somebody back to substance abuse or to kind of the doom spiral of, well, what can I possibly do to help prevent this? I think that evoking some sort of authoritarian rule with that idea of a black globe, a shackled planet of people just sort of enslaved by, you know, a strict rule and ways in which you do and don't live and a disregard for the planet itself, almost like blackening, destroying the earth we live on. Yeah, it creates quite the frightening picture.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing too is at the end, there aren't great translations online. There's no like, you know, this is 100% what it means. On this website, it says something a little different in terms of, I think it's in Arabic. I could be wrong. But at the end of the song, the man singing, I'm pretty sure in Arabic. And it loosely translates to something regarding happiness in, there's happiness in freedom. You know, genius is one thing, that happiness is complete with freedom. And then this website will say something a little different. But the ideas of those two being hand in hand, that to achieve happiness, there needs to be freedom. And, you know, I think that it definitely speaks to that, those last lines, at least, of the song, of the fact that, you know, Yeats didn't have it right when he said whatever poem that you read, I don't know, the fascist's mantra. That's what I'll name it now. that, you know, maybe you didn't have it all right. And maybe that in order to have some semblance of happiness, there needs to be a freedom to how you live.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good interpretation of it. I was also really frustrated with the inability to find a consistent translation, or at least like if that singing is supposed to be like, is it referencing some sort of religious scripture? It might be more helpful, but I could not find anything satisfactory. So if anybody out there knows Arabic or whatever language is being sung here and has some more insight, we'd be really curious to see what that's all about.
Definitely. No, that's a good point. Let's hear it, folks. If you have an exact translation, and that's the thing, I know that sometimes that there just aren't good translations for certain words in other languages. Does that fuck with your mind a little bit sometimes, that there are just like phrases in other countries that just don't have a real translation? Like, it almost makes you feel how finite our knowledge can be as like individuals, and how infinite like knowledge is, even from people that are experiencing like the same world. You know, I don't know if I explained that right, but it fucks with my mind a little bit. Like, what do you mean there's no translation? We have words for everything, man.
Yeah. Oh, I love that, where like something has been plaguing me for years, where this is probably entirely fake. But I remembered reading at one point that there was like a simple Japanese word that encapsulated the idea of a thing somebody does for you that you didn't want them to do for you, but they did it anyway, and it made your life more difficult having to undo the thing that they did, thinking it was a good favor to you. And it's funny, like, there's a word, and okay, under the assumption that this was real and it wasn't like some like fake thing somebody made up.
Right.
Assuming this is real, it's just kind of funny that like there is a short, simple way to convey that idea that everybody agreed on, whereas in English, we just needed to say that whole fucking thing to get that idea across.
That's genius. Dang.
And yet, like, we've all been in that situation where like somebody thinks they're doing something nice for you. It turns out that it's like, oh, like, this is just so frustrating, and I need to undo the mess you made, but you were trying to be nice about it, so I have to act like I'm grateful, but meanwhile, like, I'm kind of dismantling the mess you made.
That stuff's so cool. And I know there's probably a million other examples, and, you know, we would love to hear those million other examples. Oh, boy. Nice. Thank you, Jesse. That was beautiful. I just really hope that when we're editing, neither of us tries to do something nice for the other person. That
oh god. I mean, I'm kind of this one. I feel like if there's ever a song that in a future episode, if we did something like, oh, let's go back and review some songs that we want to talk more about, I feel like this is a top contender for one that we might have to like revisit after we've like digested a little bit and really tore this one apart. Like, I think this would be worthy of like a revisit episode.
Yeah, I could see this one being one of those, especially like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say like, oh, let it sit with you for a little bit because we've been able to sit with this song for like 14 years. but at the same time, like with all of the extra knowledge that we've gained from doing these episodes and then what we'll do for People's Key and Down in the Weeds and maybe his solo stuff, you know, potentially down the line, that kind of stuff. I don't know. You always come back to it with different thoughts. And actually this isn't really, oh, I guess maybe I'll save it. I have a couple of things I need to mention for Lime Tree, but let's just say recent Bright Eyes songs have recontextualized maybe some of that song for me. Ooh,
look at interesting. That
but we have another song to get through before we get there, because it does have a place and it belongs somewhere. And you know, where does it belong? Track number 12 on this album, right between 11 and 13. I Must Belong Somewhere. That's what it's called. Take us away, Jesse.
Oh, I certainly don't belong opening this one, but I'll give it a shot.
I can go for it if you'd like.
However, yeah, why don't you start us off?
Oh, I'll start us off, baby. Yeah, so I actually wrote a lot for this that I'm a little surprised that I did, because I think it's kind of straightforward. The song is kind of clear in the name of I Must Belong Somewhere, but I did also kind of wonder, you know, why he's choosing these specific lines or specific stories, if it was just stream of consciousness or he had his notebook and like, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Kind of like going about his day and like decided to throw all of this stuff together. I am going to use the E word again, existential, because I think it is a very good word for a lot of what Connor writes about in his music. You know, everything in its place, whether that be good or bad, with some sense of purpose. But I think that there is some kind of fight in maybe understanding or accepting the purpose that has been placed on the individual or the object. So I guess kind of what I was thinking was, it kind of reminds me of social constructs a little bit, right? You know, race is a thing because we make it a thing. Being black or white or gender, right? Of being a certain gender is a thing because we're giving these words some sort of meaning that we attribute to it. And so I think there is maybe a little bit going on there about the fight between who an individual feels that they are or what an object might be outside of the context of a specific society, I guess.
Yeah, I like that interpretation. Definitely feeling the existentialism, the existential dread in the song. I think that there's sort of a condemnation of not changing. And I think what Connor does in the song to sort of nail that point in is to basically show you, here's an image that is so lovely that you would never want it to change. And here's an image that you should want to change. And so, like, if you want this thing to never change, then how could you say that this other thing shouldn't also change?
Right. Like, yeah, okay.
It's super nice. Leave the bright blue door on the whitewashed wall. Like, really evocative imagery right there. I already am, like, getting that, like, quaint little village in Greece kind of vibe, right?
A seaside town,
if you will. from Chrono Cross. And then you get leave the homeless man in that cardboard cell. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't require this thing to never change, but also, like, you can't make that thing never change either.
Right.
Like, change is necessary, and even if you get rid of the, like, if good things pass, on the flip side, it leaves the door open for bad things to change as well. Like, you know, getting the, you know, making sure that the school that the poor black child is not crumbling, that these things do need to change. And even if you move past the nice picturesque things, you're making, you know, hopefully somebody else's life better by not dwelling in, you know, some past that is not great for everybody.
Yeah, I think that is, no, that's a very good way of looking at it. Either everything is dynamic or nothing is. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just have it where certain things are static and others are dynamic, for sure. It kind of makes you think about, let's say, how certain people feel about civil rights. Like, giving other people more means that you're taking away, like, they don't want anything to change about their lives, even if it comes at the expense of another person. That kind of like selfishness of it. So I think it's definitely a good point to bring up, because it ties back into the political in a sense that we were talking about throughout the album. In specifically about the bright blue door and the whitewashed wall, I think it's interesting that that one opens the album, because I thought back to classic Cars. Painted her front door seemed a suitable goodbye. And a whitewashed wall, something that's completely devoid, I guess, of any kind of flavor, variety, something like that. And now you have this big bright blue door. If you're trying to blend in, wouldn't you want a whitewashed wall, something that has no markers on it, nothing to draw attention to it? I'm not saying that necessarily it is a one-to-one connection, but I thought that was interesting and maybe something to chew on. So I think on, I guess to wrap up, the kicker kind of comes with Connor mentioning that the beat would basically roll on regardless of our existence. You know, the world requires no audience. And these objects, the rubber ball, or I don't know, is there a bicycle mentioned in this song?
Yeah, there is.
Okay, good. Because I don't know why a bicycle popped into my head. And I was like, yeah. It's such a long song that I couldn't scan it for the word bicycle. But like a rubber ball or a bicycle or things like that, like, they would still exist whether or not there was someone around to throw the ball or ride the bike or anything like that. So, you know, fuck around, extinct yourself, and find out. You know, we are not that important in the first place. You know, the entirety of human existence, our perceived importance in a sense, is also constructed. It's not real. It only has purpose because we give it purpose. So that is bleak, and, you know, classic Chris here. I love to paint a bleak picture. But I think it is kind of meant to take you a little bit in both places, to the bleak side of things. I think definitely lend credence to your point. I didn't notice that, and I think that makes a lot of sense as well. But I do think that there is a positive message in here too, that, you know, if everything has its place, if we found a place for everything, again, whether good or bad, maybe there's a chance for me to find my place too. It's just a long list.
No, I got you. I think that's a good interpretation as well. I am curious then what you make of the last two lines. You know, it's true. I wish you'd leave me here. Now, you know it's true. Why don't you leave me here? And I always sort of thought of that as, like, why don't you leave me in this song
sort of like how Take It Easy, Love Nothing, I trapped you in a song tied to a melody, like that kind of thing. Like there's power in sort of containing something in art. So I'm curious, like, does he see himself fitting in perfectly within like those albums where you go back and you listen to Connor where he belongs in the context of the album,
perhaps? I don't know.
Interesting. I mean, I'm all for that, just given the fact that we have kind of talked about that on multiple episodes. You know, Fevers and Mirrors as well, and talking about a song to pass the time. That's one of the things that I sort of mentioned about being locked in the grooves of routine, and how like his albums tend to be relics of a time and space of a Connor that maybe once was. Yeah, I honestly, I will admit I struggled a little bit on those last lines about like, I wish you'd leave me here. You know, where is that? Who is that? Does that mean Connor thinks that this is where he belongs? Or is he fed up with someone else trying to get him to go to where they think he belongs? I don't know. It's tough, but I do kind of like your reading of it. I will say it may be a little far-fetched, but I think at the same time, it makes some sense. And again, it follows a pattern that we've mentioned on previous albums as well. That's not a criticism. We have a lot of far-fetched ideas, such as Connor Overs and PlayStation 1 video games.
But in fairness, I think we're going to crack that thing wide open.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get the finest internet sleuths on it.
All right. Since I feel like at this point in the album, we're just sort of running out of transition puns. You know, it's, I guess it's just a matter of timing, you know? Why don't we go to Lime Tree?
It's like you tried to not make a pun and then you're like, I'm still gonna kind of try. But
I'm gonna like, yeah, half court shot. Like, yeah. Probably not gonna make it, but I may as well. I might as well try.
Boy. Yeah, you know, honestly, I think that as we go through the album and just, we just sort of float down the river. maybe this is the ocean. Maybe this is where we belong. Yeah. So Jesse, I'm gonna read to you what I wrote down in my notes. I'm Jesse, last name redacted, and I think Bright Eyes albums always end on a happy note. Oh yeah, well explain this shit, Jesse. Fucking do it. Fucking explain this shit.
You got me.
The fact that you had mentioned it earlier, I was like, oh, he better not be giving up the game. I wrote this and I couldn't wait to
rub it in my fucking face.
Yeah. Yeah, this song gets me in a mood instantly after hearing it. And in retrospect, and I think I mentioned a little earlier about you kind of see songs a little differently. It gives me some Comet Song vibes, but I don't necessarily think that this is talking about the same experience or that I think being cut and dry, I think I'm reading an abortion off of this, and whether that's true or not, whether it's allegory or not, doesn't matter. But I think it's very hard coded as like an abortion or a stillbirth or something like that. I think that's what reminds me of Comet Song, because he talks, you know, obviously at the end of it, little baby in a plastic box, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to start weaving some twisted web of Connor's relationships and past and things like that. But, you know, that's really for me where I kind of got like similar vibes. I do also think it's interesting, you know, the Comet being front and center on the Casadega cover art. If that's just a symbol that Connor holds dear and it's popped its way into multiple different references, that seems really interesting to me, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that is really interesting. I actually never even put that together, that the, you know, comet was so prominent on the cover art, and it was the last song of the latest Bright Eyes album. Yeah, didn't catch that one.
So this event seems to spur Connor into some sort of reminiscence. The present feels so bleak that he says that the only time he hears beautiful music is from another time. And I think that is meant to symbol reminiscence rather than a get off my lawn, this new music stuff, you kids and your hippity hop kind of thing. I think it's Connor kind of describing maybe just depression, right? Anhedonia, the loss of pleasure that is so prevalent with depression, that he spends his time maybe so stuck in the past, floating down that river, hoping the ocean will come, and yet he never gets there. He's kind of stuck, I guess, in a sense. But I'll pause there, and I'll let you get in.
No, I think this is really emblematic of a lot of, I guess, concerns that are expressed throughout a lot of Connor's stuff. Like the when I hear beautiful music, it's always from another time. It reminds me of the song Slowly off of the self-titled, I believe, or Mystic Valley. I'm forgetting
Mystic Valley. Time. Yeah.
Out of Mystic Valley. Like sometimes I need a place to go. Classical music plays from the radio. Like maybe that's just sort of an escape for him, and he sees some intrinsic beauty from classical music or music from a long forgotten past. And the like old friends I never visit, I remember what they're like, reminds me of the end of Digital Ash. I've got some friends I barely see, but we're all planning to meet. We'll lay in bags as dead as leaves. Like there's a lot of anxiety, I think, around, as you say, like a loss of pleasure and an inability to see the people that you're close to. But like in the case of an abortion, like whatever the reason behind it, it is not something that is handled, I hope, lightly. That it is, for one reason or another, something profound in like a very life-altering way to the people involved. And, you know, I can definitely see that bringing up the sort of existential crises and the sort of reevaluation of, you know, one's behavior. And it's funny that you mentioned Comet Song, because the line, but I keep going out, I can't sleep next to a stranger when I'm coming down. It reminds me of the lines from Comet Song. Where are you going? Where have you been? Questions that you'll never ask again. Like the fact that there's like some sort of infidelity going on here, or at least that's how I interpret that line, mirrored in Comet Song. Is an interesting parallel there as well.
Yeah, and I think it's just important to reinforce too that you know, just because we're seeing these parallels does not mean that these two songs are about the same thing, the same person, the same event. You know, always want to be careful about, you know, making grand statements or anything like that about a personal life that we really have no business knowing about. Truly. Yeah, I guess for me to sort of wrap up in terms of what I've thought about the song, and then a little bit of a question for you. But I guess kind of going back a little bit about the beautiful music from another time, thinking about the lines, everything gets smaller now the further that I go towards the mouth and the reunion of the known and the unknown. Consider yourself lucky if you think it is home. You can move mountains with your misery if you don't. And I kind of get those vibes of being stuck in the past, trying to find a way of living in the moment. But the misery comes in trying to be in the moment. And if you are so lucky as to be happy living in your present, consider yourself lucky. But if you are like me, if you are someone that finds pleasure in the past and finds nothing for them in sober reality, you know, you can move mountains with your misery. That's tough. That's hard. That's deep shit that Connor is getting us into.
I think that's a really great read on that. And I think the like titular line about the lime tree is kind of reinforcing that. Like, if you are not in the present, you'll miss the opportunity to actually enjoy something in the present, that you're thinking so much about like the sweetness of the past and the fruit that you're going to pick has already rotted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. It's a good interpretation of that. Did you said you had a question for me?
Yeah. So Jesse. Okay. So, you know, I've got my fancy little, album insert with all the lyrics on it.
Ooh. Okay.
So a couple of things. One, I think it is really interesting that Connor says under the eaves of that old lime tree. He doesn't say leaves. He says eaves. And eaves are like an overhang on like a house or anything like that. Curious already, right?
Okay.
And the next thing I want to bring up is that lime tree is capitalized. Capital L, capital T.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly what it is referring to, but something in my gut tells me that lime tree is not simply a tree, but rather a metaphor, maybe a place. If you're talking about eaves, maybe a building, maybe a place that is reminiscent of where he and this person met, or, you know, where they spent a lot of time, perhaps, or maybe a nickname for a home or some, you know, an apartment, something like that. Oh, we're going over to the lime tree because there was a lime tree in the backyard, and that's why this house or this place became known as that. But I think it is interesting that it's capitalized, and that he makes a point to say eaves rather than leaves. I guess kind of off of that, but I really want to focus more on the lime tree thing. Known and the unknown, so capital K, capital U as well, earlier in the song, towards the mouth in the reunion of the known and the unknown. Interesting that those are capitalized. I don't necessarily have an inkling on that one. So I'm kind of focusing on that lime tree thing. I don't know.
Okay, so for the known and the unknown, I am tempted to, without any kind of research, just off the top of my head, it might be a way to like put importance on those things, sort of like how there's a difference between a truth, lowercase t, and the truth, capital T, like as some greater like philosophical concept. And just the scrambling little bit of internet research I did as you were talking, the only thing that came up that I saw that seemed kind of plausible is the Lime Tree Bay Resort in Florida, which I now need to just quickly check. Casadega. Is Casadega not terribly far, but a little too far to
couple make hours. That
a plausible thing. Yeah. The fact that it's referencing a thing potentially in Florida is quite interesting.
Yeah, I it's funny. The first thing that I thought was, what's lime tree in Spanish?
Oh, okay.
Because because there's so many various things in Conor Oberst Pride songs. Obviously, he's very, very keen on Mexico. He loves it there. But I don't know. I didn't really find anything. It's Limero, I think, apparently is lime tree in Spanish.
I think maybe your interpretation is more correct, that this might just be a in-joke is the wrong term, but you know what I mean. Like, it's like a reference.
A nod.
Nod. It's for if the person that it's aimed to, the person that it's aimed towards is going to get it.
Yes.
And everybody else is probably going to be in the dark. But yeah, that is very interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, clearly it is something really personal. Whether fictional or real doesn't really matter. The fact is, this is clearly something painful that somebody's trying to work through. And the fact that, like a lot of the album, it's like kind of wrapped in this cryptic mystery is, I don't know, like I'm very used to Bright Eyes kind of the lyrics being on the sleeve a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And even if like it's veiled in the poetry, as all songs are, this album and this song felt especially kind of coded and cryptic.
Yeah. Do you think if Conor agreed to sit down and tell us and only us everything, but he said we could never share it with any other individual, would you do it? I would, in a heartbeat. I'd end the podcast to listen to Conor speak face to face with me for 8 hours.
you would record it so that you can constantly live in like a little bubble of like, oh, remember that one time I talked to Conor Oberst?
It would so be worth it. No offense to all of our listeners, but I would hope you would do the same.
See, I'm kind of the persuasion of like a little bit death of the author-y. In that, like, I don't know if knowing for sure what it meant would bring me any sort of clarity. Though, I would take any excuse to just kind of, like, chat with Conor Oberst.
You hear this, guys? He wants Conor to die.
And then in post, you just, like, chop up my voice to make it sound like, I want Conor to die. It's
like, yeah, the death of Conor Oberst.
I want the death of Conor Oberst. I don't even need to. You don't need to even do any chopping. I did it all for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, now we have it. Just turn that into the Instagram.
Clip it and then cancel me on Twitter.
Oh boy, good thing you can't find us on there. Actually, I think you can. I think the
you can. We just don't do it.
Active. Yeah. Oh boy. I don't know. I mean, anything else for Lime Tree? We kind of ending it on that cryptic little question. Have our audience members puzzled the same way we are?
I mean, the last thing I wanted to end on was just the last lines of the song, because as I had hinted, and then you nailed home when we finally got here, is that like this song definitely ends on more of a bummer than we're used to for Bright Eyes. And so pleased with the daydream that now living is no good. I took off my shoes and walked into the woods. I felt lost and found with every step I took. And it just reads to me really sort of like if the goal of the album was to explore, was for Conor to explore the more spiritual or esoteric side of himself, this is sort of saying that he didn't find an answer and that he's as confused as he went into it. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because I mean, there is something kind of loaded in the idea of going into the woods unprepared and abandoning things. I'm leaving this place, but there's nothing I'm planning to take, kind of thing. But there does leave the, you know, lost, found, lost, found. It's a coin still spinning in the air. So it's very ambiguous, but just the framing of it seems kind of on the bummer side, you know? I'm curious what you made of the ending of the song and thus the album.
I honestly do not think that I thought of it quite as deeply, I guess.
okay.
I mean, I think that the first part of "So Please in a Daydream, Now Living's No Good" definitely kind of speaks to what I was talking about before about getting trapped in the past and just kind of feeling, feeling that that is comfortable, that's safe, that it's a lot harder to then kind of be in the present. But I kind of just took it very face value, I guess I'd say, where, you know, I'm on a journey to find myself, and I feel like I can't come up with it exactly, but just the idea of getting lost to find yourself, I guess. There's some adage or, you know, some kind of idea poking around in my head that has to do with that. But by losing yourself, you can sort of find yourself. And that's, to be honest, all the thought that I gave it, but that I don't think that invalidates like the deeper thought that you put into it.
Fair.
Actually, you know what? It invalidates everything you said.
Oh, okay. So objectively, I'm incorrect.
Yeah. I talked to Connor, actually. He said I could share only things that humiliate you. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. You invited him in our group chat on Discord. Oh, he has some very unkind things to say about me.
Yeah, you know, Connor was very willing to donate some of his time to hop in Discord and just call you a chooch, really. As you can see, that there it is. It said Jesse's a chooch, and now he's already gone. So, but yeah, it's been two episodes. I'm gonna guess after editing, this will clock in at least an hour 45. So. We put a good 3 hours of edited content into this album. It's a good one, I think. Hot take. Pretty good album.
Yeah, really brave stance, and I'll stand there with you. Solid album. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Would listen again, and I'm going to listen again.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited to hear where the band goes next. just really excited to see. I think they're real up and comers. I don't know. I don't have too much to say, honestly. I think kind of the themes that we set out in the beginning, you get that existential terror, that environmental political terror. This is just a mishmash of a lot of different things that were probably plaguing Connor at the time. Both personally and obviously as just like as a person, you know, as just like one of these 7 billion people that are going through this crisis together.
Yeah, I think it was if I'm Wide Awake wasn't the huge exercising of those demons, Casadega certainly was. And it's not like he just let those ideas go beyond this album. But I think between I'm Wide Awake and Casadega, there was a bit that there was catharsis there in a way that, like, in that 4-year period between Casadega and our next album, People's Key, there the political slant was definitely downplayed a little more. You know, not to like jump the gun for the next episode, but I do feel like it wasn't as prevalent in People's Key as it was in the last two albums.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder if, you know, a 4-year hiatus and some, you know, solo work, and then kind of revisiting Bright Eyes, knowing that that was going to be the last album they'd put out for. I mean, they maybe even thought that was the last album they were going to put out. You don't necessarily know what was going through their heads, but maybe it was a concerted effort, a decision that maybe Connor didn't want to get into all of that stuff, or maybe that just wasn't what was front and center for him at the time. And, you know, I don't begrudge him the fact that he wanted to maybe make a completely different album or write something a little different, but haven't really haven't really depth dove into People's Key just yet. So, you know, I'll maybe I will eat those words. Maybe we will both eat those words.
Mayhaps.
Well, anything else then, Jesse, for the good of the podcast?
No. I want to thank both you and our audience for joining us on this journey. I thoroughly enjoyed unpacking this one, and I'm eager to see you guys back next time.
Yeah. I would also like to thank myself. Have a great one. Have a great one. We'll catch you for People's Key.
Yeah, we did it. We made it to the end of another episode with our pride still intact. Sanity still somewhat in the balance, but that has just as much to do with the actual recording of the episode as it does literally everything else that's going on in the world. Thanks so much for listening. If you did enjoy the episode, consider following us on Instagram. Check out the other episodes in the series where we've broken down every other Bright Eyes album preceding Casadega. And also, if you like really, really like the episode, consider going to patreon.com/Connor's Basement and becoming a patron there. Because if you do, you get to have your name read out. So shout outs to Julia, Eric, Mom, Goldie, and Lad. Thank you all so much for your continued support. It means the world to us. We'll see you next time for People's Key. We are almost to the end of the Bright Eyes discography. Just crazy to think about. So make sure you follow us on Instagram for continued updates, and we will see you then.